Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dr. Deborah J.A. Miller, who is a teacher, and she serves as an educational consultant working with Christian schools on various topics from mission development and implementation to board training and teacher professional development. She has worked in Christian schools and Christian education since 1986, serving as a teacher from grade 5 to postgraduate programs. Funded and ran a college teacher education program. She served as an administrator, and she's also even written a book called Teacher, Do You Love Me? That is the name of the book, right? And it examines.
That is, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Sure. Well, first of all, let's put this the whole issue of education in perspective in light of COVID-19. Did COVID-19, the pandemic, did it change anything as far as education in America? And, of course, the answer is yes. Yes, it did. But what mm-hmm. what has it changed? And I think there may be some positive things here.
Well, yes. Yeah, so let's start with that. I think in having to respond so quickly and so dramatically, schools shifted to the online, the at-home models, and realized that that was something that could be done, and were able to implement more technology, and it will even through cable companies were able to get at-home learning and access to the internet into many, many, many homes that maybe didn't have it beforehand. I think it forced teachers to be more creative, and I also think that it helped parents who could see what their kids were learning all of a sudden become more aware of what was happening in their child's education. I don't think that was an intended consequence, but I think it was a really important one.
Well, I think so, too. In fact, I think in some cases it caused some parents to really get upset because it's like, wait a minute. I mean, for example, I know somebody personally from the greater Los Angeles area, and his little boy was learning, you know, in school about all these terrible things that the Christians who founded, or, you know, the first
yes.
Catholic missionaries mm-hmm. of California, the ones who developed the whole missions, including Father Junipero Serra, who was the main leader.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, these were all terrible people and stuff. And in reality, no, these were actually servants. These weren't like conquistadors. But anyway, he got so upset when he learned about the false history being taught that he decided, I'm taking my kid out of the public school and putting him in a Christian school. And I imagine that story probably happened, you know, many times over.
Oh, my word, yes. It's very interesting. If you try to go onto the U.S. government website and find out an actual number of how many students are homeschooling right now, it is very difficult to find that number. And my contention is there are so many parents that have opted for homeschooling that it doesn't look good for public schools because of the funding that's affected. And I think there's a lot more people homeschooling. And interestingly, more parents in minority communities have chosen to homeschool, which is an interesting outcome of the homeschooling movement, which I think is a really good one. But yes, I mean, parents started seeing what was happening, not just the content, which some of is horrible, but also just the teachers that are sitting in front of their kids. I saw a TikTok video last week of a teacher who now is choosing to come. He's a high school art teacher. He's choosing to come to school in drag. And he put a TikTok video up about now he's wearing makeup and how his administration is saying nothing about it, you know, and the kids are pretty receptive. And I'm thinking, oh, my word, can you imagine finding out that your child's teacher came to school in drag every day? I think most parents have been kind of blissfully unaware. Like, we just trust this institution called education that when we drop our kids off in the morning and pick them up in the afternoon, that everything that transpired in our absence was something that we would feel okay about. But the truth is, nothing could be further from the truth.
You know, it's interesting. Look at the example with the recent elections in Virginia
mm-hmm.
and in the gubernatorial candidate, former governor, Terry McAuliffe,
mm-hmm.
the liberal, felt
yep.
that, you know, he probably was going to sail through and so forth. But one of the things he said in one of the debates was something like, hey, you know, don't listen to the parents. It's the teachers and it's the schools that are in charge of the teaching, not the parents, or something to that effect. And that made a lot of parents upset. Whose responsibility is it to teach the children, the parents or the teachers?
It's absolutely a parent's right to oversee that process. So it is a parent's both right and responsibility, God-given right and responsibility to raise up our children in the way they should go. We as a society chose to pool our resources to create public institutions that are under a parent's authority, right, under taxpayer authority, to offer that service to our children. But somewhere throughout history, I would say it's largely because of unions, that the teacher education union became so strong and powerful that there's a hubris, there's an arrogance that says, we know better, we're the professionals, and pat the parent on the head and just say, drop your kids off, you can leave the rest to us. And we have been bamboozled. I'll just say a really old-fashioned word. And the reality is we don't get the luxury anymore of just trusting that this wonderful institution of education is somehow working for the common good, the public good, or our good as Christian parents. Our children are not wards of the state. They're our children. It's our right and our responsibility to protect them physically, emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually. And that includes reviewing all the curriculum in whatever form or context it's being taught.
I understand you have a phrase, the progressive death grip is destroying public education. Can you elaborate on that? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think you don't have to look too far to see that our children are being indoctrinated aggressively. And you can see that the entire system now, I would say, is dedicated either directly or indirectly to inculcate a progressive secular philosophy that actively undermines traditional Christian values. So you can look at the 1619 Project, you can look at critical race theory, you can look at sex education, you can look at the LGBTQ plus movement. All of those are just some of the things. Education has led us down a rabbit hole of extremely destructive progressive philosophies. It's basically stripped our kids of any of the societal and individual anchors that define what it is to be human individually and in community. And so, I would say, and I know dozens and dozens of public school teachers who are working hard to be salt and light in a very corrupt system. And it's interesting how many of them put their kids in private school because of the indoctrination happening. I mean, I don't know if you saw this study that came out recently from the Cultural Research Center down at ACU, but it came out last month. It said they found out in their finding that nearly one-third of U.S. millennials identify as gay or transgender. And that is a stunning statistic, one-third. And I would say it's because they have come through our public school system and have been completely indoctrinated in terms of sex education and just deconstructing marriage and family, redefining human sexuality. Anyway, I'll stop there. I could go on and on.
No, that's amazing. Let's talk a little bit about this, the transgender thing. For example, there's a book called Irreversible Damage. And she gives an example, the author does, about even some liberal parents who were, you know, very tolerant and so forth. But all of a sudden, when their own daughter is going through some of this stuff, and then they realize, wait a minute, a lot of this is just a fad. And girls who don't feel good about themselves all of a sudden find a way in which they can get attention, or maybe the opposite as well. This is not something, it's just really a tragedy. And a lot of times irreversible damage is being done when they get involved in puberty blockers and surgery and all those kinds of things.
Yes. Well, and in fact, in Oregon, teens as young as 15 years old can have sex change surgery without parental consent. Oh. And that should terrify parents.
Oh, my goodness.
At 15. According to the American College of Pediatricians, I'm just looking at a statistic that I pulled up last week that just stunned me. 80 to 95% of prepubertal children with gender dysphoria will experience resolution by late adolescence if they're not exposed to social affirmation and medical intervention. It's just what you're saying, that gender dysphoria is not, it is uncommon. It used to be really uncommon. It's less uncommon now because it's become trendy. Like you said, it's fashionable for girls to say, oh, I think I want to, you know, change my name and dress like a boy.
They want attention.
Gender dysphoria is deeper than that, and I don't want to minimize the emotional trauma of gender dysphoria. But what will happen often in public school settings is that teachers will rally around these girls often and will start promoting the whole notion that, well, yeah, you should just, you know, take the reins of your life. Go by the pronouns you want, change your name, let's get you some hormone therapy so you can start the process. And interestingly enough, there's a strong link to pornography, that sometimes when these students are going through gender dysphoria, they'll be exposed by the LGBTQ plus crowd to pornography as a way of desensitizing them to just normal, you know, sexual attraction and normal, you know, growth through adolescence. But yeah, it's very, very, very troubling.
Wow.
An organization. Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
No, I have to.
I was on the GLSEN website a couple weeks ago. That's the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. I'm not a fan or a follower, but I like to know what's happening. And GLSEN, it's got chapters in 30 states. It's got 1.5 million members. This statistic from their site, over 500,000 resources are downloaded by teachers and students each year. And again, this is the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. I found a form on there. It sounds so innocuous. The title of the form is a student information form. And here's what the form asks. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 questions. What name do you want to be called in this classroom? What pronouns do you want to be called in this classroom? This is like a getting to know you, like you'd give your students like the first week of school. The third and fourth questions are the one that just killed me. What pronouns do you want me to use around your parents? What name do you want me to use around your parents? And so when I say that the schools are intentionally, have a death grip on the public education system, I don't think I'm using hyperbole to make a point. I think it really does.
Wow.
Maybe not in every state and to the same extent.
Sure.
But across nationally, I think it's a true statement.
I do think this is one of the one good thing that's come out of COVID. At least one good thing is this, it's like the mask has been pulled off the public school system, and then a lot of people have seen what's underneath. The title of your book, Teacher, Do You Love Me? What is that all about?
Yeah.
And we have about a minute and a half left.
Yes. Okay, I'll go quickly. You know, I am more and more convinced that if teachers would really love their students the way that the Bible unpacks that for us in 1 Corinthians, that it would dynamically impact their lives. Kids are so messed up right now, so messed up, socially, emotionally, in every way, their mental health, even their spiritual health. They don't feel safe anymore. They're unmoored from everything that that makes us human. But when teachers can love them with the love of God, I mean, we know knowledge informs, but love transforms. I wrote this book so that anybody who is in the role of teacher could think about the ways they could love their students back to health and wholeness and back to life. The kids need us now more than ever to not just have a ooey-gooey feel-good love, but to be deeply committed to the kind of transformational love with which Christ loves us. So I would just say, people, get the book for a teacher that you know. Get it for yourself if you're a parent and that you're a homeschool mom or dad. Teacher, Do You Love Me? I think it'll really challenge and encourage you to get back to the basics of what it means to really love the way that God encourages us to love.
Amen. All right, let me give your website. It is Deborah, DeborahJAMiller.com. Thank you so much, Dr. Miller. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.